Today on Doomed! Bumblejack Posobiec exposed. On today's episode of Doomed with Matt Bender, we will take a look into the online far-right personality Jack Posobiec. To some people, we just call him Bumblejack. We'll let you know why that is, and we'll explain his online rise and white supremacist ties. And joining me to give us all the details about Bumblejack is my guest. And let me give him a proper introduction. First off, let me turn his sound up. Let me put us up on the actual YouTube feed so people could see our beautiful faces. Michael Edison Hayden, senior investigative reporter with Southern Poverty Law Center. And as always, you can find his work on their website, Hate Watch. This particular series by Michael is four amazing pieces, which, I mean, I learned so many new things about Bumblejack that, I mean, I thought one of them actually really shocked me to my core. And it is honestly probably the tamest of ones, but it's still, it's the one thing that I thought I knew for sure about him, and that turned out to be a complete lie. We'll get to that shortly. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I should say there are more stories coming.
We're not done with Mr. Posobiec.
I have to go on vacation Saturday for 2 weeks, but when I come back, there's going to be more. So we'll give him a little bit of a breather. Let him have some Gatorade, and then we'll come back with some more.
First off, I want to thank you for finally, apparently, I wasn't sure I could do it, but this guy, on top of everything we're going to learn about him, he also is extreme, for me at least, his name is extremely hard for me to pronounce. And I, for the longest time, would call him like Posobiec and all these. I mean, I even looked up, I was telling you before the show, I even looked up like how to pronounce his name online. And like, I got like a Polish pronunciation for it because apparently it's a Polish name, but it's Posobiec.
Well, I think that's like, you know, that coupled with how much he irritates people is why you see so many people being like, oh, Jack Prilosec, Jack Probiotics, all these like kind of names. Cause it's that, and also they just don't know what his name is. It's Posobiec.
That's something I actually have to ask you is, because it would not surprise me based on everything we're about to learn about this guy. Is Jack Posobiec his actual name?
As far as I know, yes.
Okay. You haven't gotten to that yet.
But I will say, in Predator, when the Arnold Schwarzenegger character, I'm not really sure what his name was. He's at the end with, you know, he's got that rock he's going to drop on the Predator, and he's like, what the hell are you, the end of that movie. That's kind of how you feel like really looking into Posobiec for a lot of time, because it's like I he's one of those people where it's like, oh, okay, like I'm gonna figure this whole thing out at some point, and then ultimately everything new becomes this different thread. He has been a lot of places and done a lot of things. And not only that, he also has an extremely prolific output where he, you know, you turn around and you don't look at his account on Twitter for, you know, half a day, and he's already moved on to, 30 people worth of tweets.
Right.
You know, he's like a one-man propaganda machine.
Right. Right. So let's start at, you know, for people who are tuning in or like, who the hell is this Jack guy? Maybe they're not on Twitter, you know, because that seems to really be, and I think you get more into it in one of your reports, is that's really where he made his name, which is actually sort of rare for such a high profile face and name. Usually, you know, Twitter's for shit posters, sort of like Virginia's for lovers. Twitter's for shit posters. And like, you know, right. It feels like the big names sort of come out from, maybe they have they're a YouTube personality with a YouTube channel, or they have like a massive Facebook page, or they became a name on even like the website specifically for these types of characters, like on 4chan or the former 8chan or Gab. But Twitter, I mean, there's a few guys I could think of, but at Jack Posobiec's level, I don't know if there's anyone who got that big just off of Twitter.
Well, I mean, yes, that is true. And also Twitter bears a tremendous amount of responsibility for unleashing this guy on everyone. Because of the degree to which he is so Twitter focused and Twitter centric, right? Like, I mean, he started on this website. He hasn't really branched out. He doesn't really diversify with like YouTube or, you know, he's pretty tame on Instagram and stuff like that. He has really made his name on Twitter and with these Periscope videos, which I find incredibly bizarre. Now, you know, maybe, you know, I'm sure they find me really weird, but I just found it so weird the way he just like takes his wife out and starts like just talking into the camera. It was very performative, like almost like reality show
right. Kind
of thing. That's sort of how he made himself, which is these sort of where he speaks to the camera and kind of just free form, you know, says stuff.
Right. So let's start at the beginning. Let's take it back to the origin story of Jack Posobiec, the biggest far-right Twitter personality, well, at least who strictly made their name from Twitter.
All right, so he started...
I love this part, by the way. This is a great story.
he started as a Game of Thrones blogger.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Yeah.
And is at Angry GOT Fan was the handle. And... he would kind of dip his toes into some racism here and there, like made some sort of racist, sexist commentary related to the Star Wars movie Force Awakens, which was picked up by Chuck Johnson's website at that time, Got News. For anybody who remembers Chuck, it was kind of a junk news far-right website that would pump out conspiracy stuff and really went underwater during Charlottesville when they kind of named the wrong person, I believe.
Right.
Right. For what turned out to be James Fields' murder. So Posobiec was pseudonymous at this time and kind of, you know, just tweeting about Game of Thrones. But around 2016, he started to get more focused on Trump and the Trump movement and started to, you know, post along with a bunch of white nationalists. I don't think I included this in the story, but I found his handle in the same conversations with people like Brad Griffin of League of the South, of Ricky Vaughn. Remember Ricky Vaughn?
I do. Wow. Those are some like OG alt-right names that got banned pretty quickly from.
Yeah. He's an anti-Semitic, white nationalist, poster who is just like, you know, purely a poster. I mean, like, you know, if you were looking for a definition of what the alt-right was, Ricky Vaughn, whose real name is, why is my brain fritzing? Somebody at home will get it. Luke O'Brien wrote a story about him. And actually, Paul Nealon, there's a side note, I think doxed him. Doug Mackey. Sorry, there's my brain. Yeah, I mean, he would post with these guys, you know, people who are unquestionably extremists. And then he sort of, around the time of the Republican National Convention, starts to show his face in public a little bit more. He appears with Roger Stone at an event. We can go back to that. But just August 29th, I remember the date because I was searching for the time where he switched over. And sort of reviewing his account, he goes from being Angry GOT Fan to becoming at Jack Posobiec on Twitter. And, you know, I mean, he kind of, you know, he uses his own face in it, and he kind of like gets involved in really like just pro-Trump posting with like that, again, with that alt-right edge. Lots of white nationalist accounts in his conversations, anti-Semitic accounts.
I recall he really liked doing the anti-Semitic parentheses around names.
That's right. We covered that because he always, before I reported this out, he would deny that he did that. Like he used to say, like, oh, those things were fake too. That's the reason I had to do this in the first place, because this guy keeps growing. Trump is like becoming more and more obsessed with One America News. He's the president. And Posobiec would just, every time somebody would come up with this stuff, it's like, hey, I heard you're a Nazi. He would be like, all of those things are fake. They're all made up. And I was like, well, they're not. Right. And I have a lot of work that I need to publish before the election comes. But one thing I needed to do was I just had to put an end to that and just tell the truth about this guy, because there's been so many weird denials.
I remember his tweets with the parentheses and even the references to 1488. I remember seeing so many of them and then being so over the top, where I was even like, what is this guy? Is this guy trying to prove something to his alt-right buddies? Like, is he trying to say that I can post the most anti-Semitic tweets possible? Like, it was just so bizarre. Like, it was like he was trying to prove something or show off. It was so, overdone.
You know, in some, I don't say there's no issue with it. It's almost like I would just accept that from somebody who was a kind of alt-right tier, you know, internet Nazi, right?
Right.
You would accept that sort of thing. But the problem is that Posobiec, like unrestrained, without ever being checked by conservative media establishment, is now, you know, somehow a correspondent on a cable network, regardless of what you think of it, that the president watches. So that's right. The issue. It's not so much like, yes, it was very similar to what Ricky Vaughn or somebody like that would do.
And you're talking about OANN for everyone who's,
Yeah. I mean, this guy had managed somehow to deceive the conservative media establishment into allowing, or either that or the conservative media establishment is so degraded that they let somebody like Jack Posobiec into their, into this type of position. That they were not able to control or check it. So that is the necessity of it. I always took for granted that he had posted those kind of things, because that's the kind of guy he is. He's a person of very low character based upon, you know, every observation I've had of him going back to when I first started covering this stuff.
Now that you dipped into his, like, we'll get more into it, obviously, because the media organizations you mentioned come into his career later on. But we got to bring this up now. Now, to me, out of everything we're about to learn about this guy, this is one of the earliest things I remember about him. I remember seeing this guy post all this terrible alt-right Nazi stuff. 2016, you know, early on in the Trump era of when he was running for president. And I look at this guy's profile and it says former CBS News. And I mean, I don't know why I took it for, like, this is a former CBS News guy. How weird, man. He really fell off the wagon. What happened at him at CBS News? Like, is this like a Baked Alaska type story where he worked at BuzzFeed and then all of a sudden became a fascist?
It's so funny. The former CBS News thing. But so I, like, in the reporting, I don't write former. Well, let's leave it open to, because consulting with people here editorial, they're like, well, we don't know what FMR even means.
Oh, it means so former.
let's just report what it says, which is former CBS News. But I, you know, like, you almost want to say, like, okay, again, you guys are racist, anti-Semitic, you like Jack Posobiec, that's fine. Whatever, but you almost got to say, like, I mean, you really are willing to go to this degree of fraud where somebody could claim to have this relationship to CBS News in his bio, and then just be like, okay, that's okay, he can give us the news now, even though this is not on his resume, this is not on his CV.
I feel like we have to pause for a second. We have to make this absolutely clear to people listening. I'm going to ask you straight up, and you're going to give me the answer. Is Jack Posobiec a former or foomer employee of CBS News in any way, shape, or form that we know of?
Here's what I found. So I asked CBS News, and they said he never worked there. So then I asked CBS Philadelphia, because he's from the Philadelphia area. And they said, no, he's never been with us. The news director told me. Then I asked CBS Washington, D.C. And because he lives in that area now, right? And they said, you know, somebody who is a veteran reporter of the station said, no, he's never been there. So then I asked Will Chamberlain, who is one of his friends, a sort of a pro-Trump kind of, I don't know, how would you describe him? He's sort of like a kind of everybody's sidekick,
right? Yeah.
In MAGA Twitter. He's just sort of a supportive.
I think that's the best way to describe him. I don't think I've ever seen his name pop up by itself. It's always him with somebody else.
the cuddly beta of the alt-right, Will Chamberlain. Anyway, so I said, you know, you ever work for any kind of anything like that? No, I, you know, as far as I know, no. I asked Cassandra Fairbanks, who I think has now blocked my phone number. But, you know, as I said, no, I, you know, as far as I know, it was just Rebel News. They think that that's like journalism. So that counts to them. And then, you know, so there was no history of that. Now, he once worked for a conservative talk radio station that where Michael Smirkanish of CNN actually worked. And Smirkanish was like, he was, you know, he was a like an intern, like a production intern.
Right.
Who's like, I mean, I guess I don't know what he would do, like bring party favors to like events they would have,
but
or
that's
something.
Not, that's not CBS News or even a CBS affiliate, is it?
I found a resume of Pazovic's. Now, I don't know, you know, like it matches a lot of his verifiable history. And in the resume, it lists that conservative talk radio station, again, not CBS News, as far as I can tell. And it was during his years at Temple University. So, again, like I work for a film production company as an intern. Like this is not stuff I would put in my Twitter bio. All I'll say is just read the story, read the evidence. If Pazovic wants to come forward and say, like, yes, I worked for CBS News at some point and there's XYZ, I would like to hear it because I could not find it.
I got
to
tell you, Ben.
His big claim that he got verified on Twitter.
That is right. That is his claim to legitimacy. I mean, I would see. I didn't like give him any sort of like credit. I didn't think he was in anybody just because it said
that. His only claim to legitimacy, though. He's also what he says. He's like, you know, he calls himself Agent Pozo.
Right,
and then
I mean,
he's got this reserve naval intelligence background. Like he's like, you know what I mean? He portrays himself as like a James Bond type figure, right, to his audience. And, you know, I mean, I spoke to, you know, former active duty naval intelligence officers like, yeah, he almost certainly did very little. I mean, again, he's bragged about a lot. We'll see, you know, what kind of, I mean, he was talking about it today, I think. We're talking about like all the stuff he's done. Why don't you talk about the stuff you saw at Gitmo type very like, it's very, you know, it's quite fun. You know, one other thing Pazovic does. I'm sorry, I'm tangent. I apologize.
No,
for
don't
your,
worry about it.
All over the place. He wears this like, if you ever see him on ONN, he has this like, yellow, like this gold lapel pin. And you know, one thing that, you know, speaking to people at the Navy, they're like, that's like considered a warfare pin, and it would be not something that you would be expected to wear,
right,
like on the air, unless you were like a Navy SEAL or something.
Right.
Right. Which is part of the reason that a lot of people in the Navy seem to, you know, dislike Pazovic or from the Naval Intelligence community is partly you know, sort of self-aggrandizing thing. I mean, he's wearing this pin like he's, you know, he's in a movie. When in reality, you know, you're supposed to carry yourself with a bit more humility.
Right. Well, I'm assuming his time in the military is how he was so slick and smooth when he was, I guess, allegedly, I should say, cheating on his wife via the dating app Bumble.
I'm not comment. I did not include anything. You know, it's part of the thing is like, you know, look, the charges against Pazovic in this series are very serious, right? We're having a fun conversation about a guy who has been a peculiar internet phenomenon for a long time. But like the charges are very serious.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
So,
but like, I still can't get over the CBS News thing.
Well, the former, but like the Bumble thing, you know, it's like, I didn't have time to get into the Bumble. So like, you know, did he cheat on his wife on Bumble? I couldn't get into it because anyway, you and I get on tangents. We got to stick. Let's stick to
the script. Let's do it. CBS News. Now, okay, so let's get to the next important thing, because, you know, once we've now established that this guy is basically, you know, straight up, at the very least, someone who exaggerates. He certainly appears to be a liar in many aspects. He has falsified his career credentials up to this point in his life story to basically get this air of legitimacy around him where, you know, oh, he's a former reporter. He must know what he's talking about. He has legitimate sources.
Right.
Oh, he's a former Navy SEAL is what you said, or?
No, no. He was a reserve naval intelligence officer. but I'm saying that the people who to wear such a pin that he's wearing. Sorry if I got a hot mic.
No, that's good.
Voice is too loud. Okay, but I'm saying that the pin that he wore is something you would wear if you were. It's a warfare pin. It's something you wear if you were a Navy SEAL or things like that. And it's not considered something you would wear outside of naval events. You know, internal naval events. I don't know how else to put it, according to the people with whom I spoke.
Right, right. So we have this guy who's everything I just mentioned. And at this point, even with the anti-Semitic tweets and the white supremacist words being thrown around on his online profile, he still is pretty much at this point, from what we know so far here and what we've been discussing, no different than, I guess, your average shit poster online. But this is where I guess these things start to differ, and he creates really this massive profile. Let's start with the Richard Spencer connection, because
sure.
This is interesting in multiple ways, and you'll everyone will hear why in a second.
Yeah, so he goes from his Game of Thrones persona to being Jack Posobiec in late August, and a week later he is kind of hyping up on Twitter this Richard Spencer event, which also featured Peter Brimelow of VDare, which is a white nationalist website, and Jared Taylor of American Renaissance, which is arguably the most famous white supremacist publication in the United States.
Right.
So he's tweeting about this, and he kind of does journalism at it in the sense of tweeting pictures from it. And they have that kind of tone of glorification where it's sort of like media can't get enough Richard Spencer, the way you would, for my point of view, it's the way you would take pictures and show of somebody you had a crush on or something like that. I mean, he was absolutely, treating him with this sort of starstruck framing. So he does that for a bit. And then in late September, he stages a protest. I got to share you a picture with it of it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't have it on me, so I'll have to get it afterwards.
Oh, all right, sure.
Possibly you can show it on Twitter or whatever. But basically, he shows up at this the opening of the African American History Museum in Washington, D.C. And I don't know how to describe it, but he looks like an alt-right Kurt Cobain. Like, he's got this blonde wig. It's supposed to be a Hillary wig, but because of his stubble, he looks like Kurt Cobain. And he's wearing an orange jumpsuit, like Hillary's in prison. And he's holding a sign that says "Blacks are super predators -H, which is not an actual quote by Hillary Clinton. That is kind of a bastardization of what she said.
Right.
And we all know the criticisms of her comments there. But he was there kind of waving this sign. It's interesting that John Lewis is obviously in the news right now because he had fought for a quarter of a century to see that museum built.
Right.
So it was a really big emotional thing. And then here you have Posobiec waving around this sign that says "Blacks are super predators" at this event in front of a large kind of black dominated crowd. Very weird move to make. And Gateway Pundit covered it, one of the finest news sources. And the next day, he texts Richard Spencer the Gateway Pundit article and photographs that appear to show a black police officer detaining him at this event. And he's saying to Richard Spencer, in these text messages, I was told that, you know, this is happening more and more in DC, something to that effect. And, that this happened because I was white and the officer was black, and Richard Spencer has kind of got this vibe that I read is sort of like, oh, okay, interesting. Like, you know, just kind of just yesing this guy. And then he's like, he reminded me of the fatties in Covington's novels. Mm. Now, this is interesting. I had to track down the fatties in his books, in Covington's books. It's basically this whole race war premise that is laid out. It's the Northwest Quintet, I believe it's called. And
Harold Covington is who you're talking about, just so everyone knows. Yeah.
He's a stone cold white supremacist. I mean, he's as real as it gets.
Well, was.
Yes, and he praised Dylann Roof. After that horrific shooting. And this is a very...
Let me just clarify. Was because he's dead. He's dead now, not because he had some sort of turnaround that is now not a white supremacist.
Yes.
He died a hardcore white supremacist in 2018.
That's right. So this is a pretty obscure... this is a pretty obscure figure to kind of drudge up in your text messages with Richard Spencer if you are not at least... aware of some of the kind of serious texts of the movement, why would you know anything about Covington at all? I mean, this is not something that I came to in the study of far-right extremism with a knowledge of Covington. You have to be in it. And
if I recall from your report, even Spencer wasn't too familiar with Covington. Like, he knew the name, but he didn't seem to have been such a reader of Covington's material.
But, you know, like, Spencer is, has a much, like, I don't know how to describe it, like a cooler facade, right, that he presents. Like, he's more likely to make a reference to some kind of leftist writer or something like that and try to spin that into a, thing than this kind of just brutish racist stuff. He would not be into that. He would be a little embarrassed. It's kind of cringy. But Posobiec referenced Covington directly. Immediately after doing this stunt at the African American Museum, I don't know, strike me as being pretty damning.
Right. The idea too that, it's obvious, but I just want to say, cause it's just something that's just eating at me. The idea that the guy tweeting 1488 and the parentheses signs, calling Hillary Clinton a super predator as a good faith criticism, like protesting her as if he has a problem with that. I mean, he probably has said, he definitely has said much worse than super predator.
What is also funny, and I'm not going to go too far on a tangent here, control myself, but it's really funny that his reaction to this is sort of like to be like a Jesse Singal kind of Barry Weiss cancel culture reaction, which is like, I mean, come on. Like, right. Are these people really buying this stuff? And maybe they are, you know, I mean, I think a lot of the, you know, what we refer to online a lot as grifting, this is a grift or whatever, is really taking advantage of an audience that doesn't, apparently doesn't know any better. I mean, how can you possibly conflate, you know, reading Harold Covington and using triple parentheses with cancel culture? This is not somebody like, you know, said something, you know, that is not 100%. I mean, it's just completely ridiculous. So after that, that goes down with Spencer. He messaged Spencer again. This is sort of bonus material, but he messages Spencer again after Spencer gets his account suspended from Twitter. Now, I know you're saying, oh, Spencer's on Twitter. But he lost Radix Journal, which was his one of his publications. He lost NPI's account. NPI is his nonprofit
Institute, right?
And I believe his account, his Richard Spencer account, got a timeout. And then they, I guess, decided to let him stay, which Twitter can explain to their maker after they die.
They did they did take away his blue check mark, though, Michael.
Oh, yeah. that's just giving him street cred. Anyway, the yeah. So he messages him again after Spencer loses these accounts, and the timing of the message shows that he's like right on top of it, right? That he's close enough to Spencer to whatever degree to respond to him. It's, I think it's like 5 o'clock. Spencer loses his accounts based upon the timing of other messages I see. And then like, 40 minutes later, he's like, "Hey, what happened? What did you do to get gone?" And then he says, "Oh, I was suspended once." And I assume it was when he was Game of Thrones. So, I mean, it's not like he had no connection to Richard Spencer, like he's trying to make it out to be, or that he I believe he told Town Hall, they did a Q&A to try to, puff him up and try to keep him going a little bit longer before the house closes in on him. But to Town Hall, he did this little Q&A where he was like, "Oh, I take selfies with people all the time." It's not a fucking selfie, dude. Right. you're texting about white supremacist books with Richard Spencer and stuff like that. Let's be real here.
Right. I mean, and let's get into this too, because Spencer has some interesting things to say about Posobiec. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but Spencer was right on in his assessment of Posobiec. I mean, it's just bizarre, and you've heard this from other people too, apparently.
Well, yeah, Katie McHugh said the same thing, independent of Spencer, and she is,
What did they say?
Spencer described him as being like a sociopath, seeming like a sociopath, that he had these like dead eyes, and McHugh said that like when she looks at him, she said that there was no there, meaning that you're looking at a face, but there's like kind of nothing behind the eyes to some degree. And she went further than that, in her analysis, but I kind of kept it, I kept the description to that, just to corroborate that these two people were both at this event and they both had memories of Spencer. I didn't want it to seem too much like we were painting him as a sociopath, but it's interesting that people keep saying that. And it's not only that, but also, you hear Media Matters reporters and stuff like that, well, they'll be talk or people, whatever, they'll say like, yeah, if you see him, he kind of reminds you of a sociopath. There's something about him that feels very like there's something dull.
Right. A lot of these, alt-right guys, they obviously feud a lot over petty things. I mean, it's honestly probably how a lot of them end up breaking down and getting insider stuff out there about them, each other, when they're knocking each other to reporters. But I don't think I've ever heard even the two rivals describe one another in that world like I've heard Posobiec. Like, there's clearly people who have met him and have similar leanings as him, have met him, and they even feel like there's something wrong there. There's something off. I mean, that says a lot.
Because look at the context in which, according to Spencer, Posobiec introduced himself. Okay. So they're at this. This is so funny too. I'm sorry. I can't laugh. I shouldn't laugh. The reporting is so serious, but some of this stuff is so fucking funny.
Posobiec is really like, I don't see like it literally is just back and forth between like the most ridiculous thing you ever heard to like some of the most effed up shit you'll ever hear. Like,
yeah,
it's literally.
No, but it's quite scary in some ways, right? Too, right? Because he introduces himself to Spencer, according to Spencer, at a bar called the Tilted Kilt, which is a chain, Spencer referred to it as a Scottish themed Hooters bar. And I was unaware that these things, originally from the New York area. I have never been to a Tilted Kilt before, but apparently a lot of people knew of its existence, knew of things like that, who I spoke to. And it's sort of like a Hooters, but they dress in kind of, skirts and whatever else.
I'm right there with you, buddy. I have no idea what that place is.
So according to Spencer and according to McHugh, it's Cernovich who kind of hosts this event. McHugh kind of remembered him signing books there, I believe. And he's there. Posobiec is there. people from Identity Europa are there. Vidar, the people from Vidar are there. I mean, it's a collection of white supremacists. And Roosh, right. Roosh V, the male supremacist.
Right.
And, you know, total psychopath. So they're all at this, private event with Cernovich outside of the Republican National Convention in 2016. And Pazovic introduces himself, according to Spencer, as, I'm a big, I'm a supporter of, I guess, National Policy Institute, his white nationalist think tank. And he says, I'm Roger Stone's man. I'm Roger Stone's man, which is weird, right?
That is bizarre to just bring up like that and to say it like that, too. You're his man.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird. And I think it sort of helps to explain why people have this distrust of Pazovic broadly, is because none of these things seem to make sense. I mean, there's all, every time you look at a thing.
And that turned out to be a lie, right? He actually had no.
No, he's connected to Roger Stone.
Okay, so he just.
Well, Roger Stone was, certainly, I mean, we hear from his point of view because I listened to his very early podcast and he's talking about Stone constantly. But Stone was connected to Citizens for Trump. And Citizens for Trump was the nonprofit that Pazovic was, 501c4 that Pazovic was involved in. During that stretch where he goes from being at Game of Thrones fans to Jai Pazovic. And there's video from the RNC, from around the RNC, like a bookshop. Roger Stone gives a talk, and Pazovic is spotted behind him, kind of just like a, seeming like Roger Stone's man, quite frankly. So it makes sense why people would have this, even in the movement or whatever, have this sort of distrust of Pazovic, is because every time you look at a thing that he is or is supposed to be, there's something off with it, right? I mean, there's something off with One America News as a news network to begin with.
Right.
There's something off about Rebel Media. There's a question of, like, what was he doing for money during that time between 2016 and when he was hired for One American News? Like, how is Jack Pazovic making money during that time? It's very confused. Just posting? I mean,
does his wife happen to be a very rich lawyer and they got a divorce? And did he do the Cernovich method, is what I'm saying?
People ask me all the time, is like, did you look at the wife? Is she a Russian agent or something? Like, I can only report what I know. And like the connections to far right extremism are so strong that I think that's the way everyone should see him and worry about that. But there is a lot of just bizarre stuff. Again, claiming to be something he's not, involved in so many disinformation campaigns, small and large. Yeah, there was Pizzagate, which happened right around the election. And in this time,
he was a hard pusher of that. Yeah, he was a hardcore pusher of that. Yeah.
But not just Pizzagate. I mean, he promoted fake Antifa accounts, and he was one of the first people that I've ever found. And, I think we're going to get into this at some point in the series, to, call on President Trump to designate Antifa a terrorist organization. This is at the same time he's promoting fake news related to Antifa.
And Trump has given him shout outs before. So on Twitter. So it appears that he is listening to him,
The first time Trump retweets him was immediately after Charlottesville, when he needed a lifeline. He was looking for something. Pazovic gave him the counterspin. It was it was prepared for him. It was on a platter. He came out. I mean, that's essentially what I see Pazovic is doing, is just providing these ready-made propaganda spin narratives that the Trump people can, just here it is, dish it out constantly all day on Twitter. Boom, 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 boom. You want it? Anyone want to bite on this? This one goes viral. Then he'll retweet that tweet. This was one where he was comparing it to violence in Chicago, which, as we know, is like a part of the fascistic drumbeat coming out of the Trump people all the time, is like, what about the violence in Chicago? What about the violence? Right. It's their way to spin anything that where you point to, like, okay, what about this rise in far right extremism, white supremacy? Oh, what about the violence in Chicago? So he does that immediately after Charlottesville, and Trump retweets it. That's how, you know, people started to pay more attention to who Jack Posobiec was, and that's around the time when everybody started screenshotting his 1488 tweets and triple parentheses tweets, because before then he was kind of such a weird guy that you could treat him like he was unimportant until you realize, wait a second, actually, Trump is paying attention to this person.
Right. You know, while we're talking about Trump, you know, one thing I always find interesting about Posobiec and his Trump, is early on in the 2016 election, I remember there was an incident where someone was at an event holding up a sign that said, "Rape Melania." And yeah. Posobiec was one of the first people, if not the first person, to report on this piece of quote-unquote news and frame it as, oh, look, an anti-Trump protester is holding right. up this disgusting Rape Melania sign, which, let me just put it out there for anyone listening and doesn't know, that is gross and disgusting to say about any woman, regardless of what her political ideology is. It's just gross, period. End of discussion. No one should say anything like that. But apparently, it later came out that the person behind it, that sign, was actually Posobiec himself. Now, do we have confirmation on that? Do you know? Like, was it Posobiec behind that?
I mean, the BuzzFeed reporting says that it was. And, you know, I trust Bernstein on that. It was well reported. Another thing that's in Bernstein's report from that time that is really fascinating, and I actually think almost more interesting in some ways, was that Posobiec, right after the election, was trying, you know, claimed to be pushing people to try to say, shoot Trump, kill Trump at protests, and then tape them saying it in an anti-Trump protest, and then let it go viral to discredit the protesters. And this type of stuff is not fake news, it's disinformation. This is politically charged right. disinformation meant to, you know, again, my opinions, this is meant to support, prop up fascism, pure and simple. Oh. Like, that's why he does it. Well, I have to be perfectly with my labeling, right? Because people come to me for the when someone says, is this person a neo-Nazi? I can't, you know, whatever. But to me, I mean, this is fascist propaganda and disinformation. For too long, we've just been like, oh, this is fake news and whatever, without realizing there may be a certain seriousness or even a level of craft to this. This is how, you know, Jason Stanley, in his book, How Fascism Works, you know, he lays out this sort of this friend-enemy distinction that fascism creates in its propaganda. And that's what a lot of Posobiec's disinformation is really about. It's sort of demonizing the other, demonizing leftists in such a way that or working to discredit them, and to such an extent that supporters of the president or supporters, conservatives who might be on the fence, are ready to align themselves against these demonized figures. And they're and Posobiec, more than any other group, I think, goes after leftists.
Right.
And it's and one of the reasons he survived, I think, despite the anti-Semitism, despite the ties to neo-fascists and neo-Nazis and all this other stuff, I think is because he goes so acutely after leftists, and conservatives hate leftists.
Yes.
They just hate them. Right. You know? So if you come to them and with something that is like, hey, this leftist you know, just punched my toddler, right? And it didn't happen. I feel like that there is, the culture is so foaming at the mouth on the right that they're willing to say, okay, yeah, he got this wrong, but he's one of our guys. He's, you know, he's sticking it to the leftists that we hate. And that's why part of the reason I think Posobiec has gotten away with so much. That's what the Ray Milano stuff should have.
It's also,
it should have gotten rid of him a long time ago, but it makes leftists look bad, so that's okay for a lot of people on the right.
Right. It's also a sense of, they probably say to themselves, in a sense, you know, they see it and they go, oh, well, we believe they could have done that, you know. They may not have done it in that instance, but it's also pretty amazing that the guy who had the rape Melania sign is promoted by Melania's husband left and right. Like, it's
he colors in a lot of the fantasies that the right has about leftists, right? That they're terrorists, that they'll stop at nothing and kill, like, you know, whatever, that they're just out to destroy, to bomb, to kill, their whatever, that they want to kill Trump. Everybody wants to murder Trump, that they want to rape Melania, right? These really base things. And he fills in those kind of fantasies that people have. You remember, probably like just before you and I ever live streamed together for the first time, probably. I can't remember when we did for the first time, but do you remember the Antifa Civil War shit in
with the super soldiers and the Antifa super soldiers and all that shit?
I mean, that it was amazing because it was just like this fantasy, this like lurid fantasy about Antifa people just like, you know, coming to like stab Trump supporters in the middle of the night dressed like ninjas and all this stuff. And it was fascism march, right? Revolutionary Communist Party, which has very little credibility on the left, brought together like 317 people or some shit like that in a small demonstration in New York City. But there's like a million people were just like ready to go to war, right? People in their F-150s or whatever, like doing live streams talking about what they're going to do when the Civil War starts that day. You know, Posobiec, his greatest skill as a propagandist is to fill in these lurid fantasies with details that people find plausible. And then when they're proven false, people are willing to forgive them, in part because they have these predisposition to hate leftists and distrust leftists. So they're like, oh, Jack got it wrong, who cares? The bad guys. He went after the bad guys.
Right. I mean, we don't even need to go that far back to the Antifa Civil War stuff. We could literally look at just a few weeks ago when suburban America all over the country was going nuts over Black Lives Matter protesters and Antifa groups being bussed into our small towns to burn down our stores and businesses and houses and...
On a tangent again, but that is why Posobiec is so dangerous.
Right.
Because he has this massive following. And then you look now, it's like Andy Ngo, Jack Posobiec, these guys who are not they have no credibility or credentials as reporters. They're not honest people in any stretch of the imagination. You know, particularly as it terms of, comes to reporting. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, Andy Ngo like twists things constantly, leaves details out on purpose, or I should say for legal purposes, apparently on purpose. I don't know why else you would leave out the fact that a white supremacist was a white supremacist.
Right.
It's like that. You know, the state is listening and the state is looking for an opportunity to go on offense against these protests, and they, you know, these propagandists are dangerous, even if they're goofy and insane, and you can laugh at Bumble Jack and like former CBS News and all this stuff, and bringing his wife on these ridiculous periscopes. It's quite laughable. His comic called Agent Pozo, but yet he's got this audience, and we see state power right now being flexed in this like really scary way. And it's coming in part from the propagandists who are telling people that this is necessary.
Right. And you know, on that note, actually, I think we should move on to, in what my opinion is, and I don't know how much longer you have, but we could just briefly touch upon this stuff. But in my opinion, this is the most problematic stuff from him. This is where, I mean, there people hear that, he associated with Richard Spencer and these other names that we mentioned. And yeah, that's a pretty big deal. But then there is a even more extreme line that Posobiec crosses. And there are groups that I don't even think Spencer would publicly want his name attached to, that Posobiec has ties with that you go into. And some of these groups are fairly, you know, I mean, they're all dangerous, but these ones are dangerous, dangerous. I mean, these are guys who have gone out there and done things where, I mean, it would make Richard Spencer say, oh, I don't think that's a good look. You know, I mean,
so we're talking about Poland.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. So in May of or in April 30th of 2017, Zobik promoted or amplified a protest, a march by a group called National Radical Camp, or a movement, I should say. They're a movement, National Radical Camp, and they were founded in 1934 in Poland, and banned 3 months after their founding because they were so anti-Semitic, and they were really designed to mimic and mirror the Italian fascist movement and obviously the German fascist movement next door. And during the 1930s, bombed Jewish homes and businesses. So that is not good, and a pretty scary thing to be hyping to your followers. And then, you know, one thing that's interesting, I think, in the reporting that I don't know if people caught on to, but I tried to highlight the reaction from some of the, you know, Pazobic's very gullible followers who see this. And then one of the people replies to that tweet and says, America should be like Poland. This is like some MAGA person, some person who had MAGA in their profile still. So you have people who don't know what they're being shown, being like, yeah, this is great. This is like us. This is like MAGA. And this is like one way you can, you know, that Pazobic has very clearly laundered extremist stuff into the MAGA movement to sort of normalize fascism. You know, he refers to them with a sort of a euphemistic word, which is nationalists, Polish nationalists, you know, march against migrants or whatever. They're actually marching to celebrate their founding. So it's defiant, right? They were banned, right? So these people are marching in defiance of the people who are trying to keep them back. I mean, the UN has tried to get them to be banned. They're under investigation for promoting a criminal investigation for promoting like the a memorial of a German SS, or no, it was a Belgian SS officer. So this is hardcore shit, and something that would absolutely be a deal breaker in any other time but 2020. I mean, this is the kind of thing where you do this once, or it's discovered that you did this once, and that you should be shown the door. But because we have, you know, because Trump has opened up this weird world, again, I use this Jason Stanley's language, this friend enemy distinction, where anyone from outside, like I'm an enemy. So I come to the people who support Pazobic and I say, hey, by the way, what about, you know, this genocidal shit over here? How do you feel about that? Are you guys cool with that or not? And they'd be like, well, SPLC is a hate group. We hate SPLC. You guys are all bad. You're all liars. I'm like, okay, but here's the evidence of it. And it happened. Anything else, you know, and then they'll just get, you know, sort of quiet is the way I would respond to how they've, that's the way they've responded to this story.
Right.
But so, okay. So he tweeted one thing about National Radical Camp. Let's give him a mulligan there and say he didn't, you know, he didn't mean to promote this genocide.
Whoops.
But he also met with and has interacted with and cited for his reporting a leader for, I can't pronounce it, forgive me for the Polish stuff, Ruch Narodowy. Who cares, man? RN. Anyway, this is a fringe Polish political party. Now, Duda is considered by many people to be far right, understandably, the Polish president. This is far to the right of that. They're anti-Semitic. Their leaders have trafficked in Holocaust denial or Holocaust revisionism, I should say. They sort of blamed the Jews for their, you know, for what had happened, which is even more grotesque. I don't know. No, actually, I can't do relatives. OK, it's disgusting, whatever it is. So and they're also their founding is connected to National Radical Camp from things I've read as well. Mm-hmm. So Pazobic met with one of the leaders of this party, Christoph Bosak, in July of 2017, around the same time that Trump was giving his Warsaw speech, which was widely regarded to be sort of an alt-right speech at the time. So he's out, now you have Pezovic out on the streets there meeting with this guy from this fascist party. One other thing to note about Bosak, he got less than 7% of the vote when he ran for office this time around. And in a country that's already, you know, pretty heavily leaning right these days, I mean, to be the furthest fringe there, he has made statements that suggest he's questioned whether the Earth revolves around the sun. I mean, he's like a real bizarre figure. And kind of like, you know, it's a sort of, you know, the same sort of thing that we see here, where it has this kind of bleed over into flat earth level conspiracy mongering. Because I think once you kind of say, okay, I'm going to deprogram myself from liberalism, right, in my head or whatever thing, you start to deprogram all kinds of things where it's like, oh, maybe Nazism isn't bad. Oh, maybe science isn't real. Like, you know, maybe the earth is flat or whatever. Right. So he's one of those dudes. And Pezovic cited this guy for his, you know, it was a tweet. I don't know if it counts as reporting, but cited him in reference to Antifa, suggesting that Antifa is a global terrorist operation based upon what this guy is saying. It's like, hey, Jack, no shit. This guy doesn't like Antifa. He's a fascist. Right. Right. I mean, which is kind of a pattern you see with people who don't like Antifa. They tend to be, you know, although there's, you know, I'm sure there are many people who just don't like political protests.
If only there was something in the name anti-Antifa that gave it away, you know?
Yeah, it's a little odd.
Now, I got if you have a minute, I have two questions from you from two people in the YouTube chat, specifically for you, so I wanted to make sure I got to them.
I'm drinking my Red Bull like Amy Teresa, whatever her name is, Mother Teresa. What was her name?
I have no idea.
I don't know. She's the one, like, I don't know. She does one of those podcasts. She's like an Australian.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Right. Amy Therese. Right. Like, yeah. I don't really pay attention to.
I got sugar in mine.
I know a lot of people say she's got lots of problems in terms of her political leanings and her claim that she's a leftist.
I don't know much other than, you know, everybody's tweets make me nauseous. Including my own.
So let me get to these two questions. All right. One is from Samantha Kuttner, who through a super chat writes, is there a Pasobic Bannon Dugin connection? I'm guessing Alexander, I don't know how to say his last name, but Alexander Dugin or Duggan. Connection you are aware of. And is there any relation, extended partnership with Rebel Media?
That's a good question. That is a very good question. Let's start with Rebel Media, right. because we'll just do that. That is a very good question. So all I know is how Rebel Media responded to Pezovic. Like, he was like, it's funny to imagine Pezovic actually pushing the limits of what Rebel Media could find like acceptable. But I mean, he led essentially this event outside the White House, which featured just a whole bunch of neo-Nazis and white nationalists, more than I've even reported yet. And I'm hoping to get something in about some of his contacts from that event. But there were a lot of people there who were extremists at this event. And it was basically a Pezovic, you know, Pezovic is at the center of it. And it was like sort of petitioning kind of to get Steve Bannon, you know, keep Steve Bannon in the White House and keep him from being pushed out of influence. I'll just say that he only lasted about a few weeks with Rebel Media before they got rid of him. Right. And I don't know why it happened, but I have to think that, you know, that his extremist ties probably impacted it. Afterwards, they had to apologize to Jason Kessler because he was accused of plagiarizing a Jason Kessler video. which is grim. That's grim. Jason Kessler, not the brightest bulb in the shed.
Right. But do you think the Jason Kessler plagiarism gave it away to Rebel Media exactly who they were dealing with in terms of Jack Posobiec?
The question is, does Rebel Media care? I mean, my feeling is, you know, that things would get, you know, they only care when things get so hot that they get scared and run away.
I mean, they paid Lauren Southern for a very long time.
She's another one, man. She's another one. I need the full story there. I need any Lauren Southern sources out there who have details about her, come to me, please, because who knows what's going to happen after the election. I don't even want to get into like what Trump could do theoretically with all this.
She bowed out of this world. She bowed out. She said, I had enough, yeah. Right? She took off.
Yeah,
and...
well, I never have enough. I'm doing this until I'm dead. So they got to root for the COVID-19 to get me because I keep reporting on these motherfuckers until I'm done. She's shady, man. Anyway, Rebel Media, my feeling is that, you know, he probably is has a good relationship with Ezra Levant, because when I reached out to Ezra about Posobiec, you know, interviewing the Clark brothers, who are these, you know, terroristic neo-Nazis that that he collaborated with while he was with Rebel, you know, he's like, oh, nothing of the sort. Jack's a great guy, you know, type of emails. At minimum, he didn't want trouble for himself. I don't think there's any like ongoing ties with him. Now, the Bannon stuff is very interesting. It's interesting observation. The first time that Posobiec, I was aware of, appeared on One America News was in the immediate aftermath of Charlottesville, maybe 2-3 weeks. And you know, if you remember at that time, Bannon was forced out of the White House because things got very hot with the whole white supremacy stuff. Because they're looking for a fall guy. Now, in my opinion, they may have got the wrong one in that Stephen Miller filled that vacuum and is, to me, perhaps more scary than Steve Bannon.
Bannon's a bit more of a strategist. He would like downplay or drop some of this stuff if he felt like it was a bad strategy, whereas Miller is on board and he'll go down with the ship, you know? He'll take it to his grave.
Miller's... You know, you see him in his interviews and stuff like that, recent ones. He does not seem well to me. Like, he does not seem like he's a really scary individual. But so is Bannon. I mean, we're all there's different shades of anything. But he mentions in the video, and I think Media Matters clipped it. He mentions in the video you know, Bannon is just because he's gone from the White House, it doesn't mean he's going to stop. He's going to be doing things from outside the White House, influencing things and so forth. And that indicates to me that he has some relationship with Bannon. And now you see him, he's on Bannon's War Room pandemic all the time. One of the guys in the Polish story that makes an appearance, like I'm not going to even try to pronounce his name, is this kind of Polish chud figure who appeared on a Polish forum saying anti-Semitic stuff. That guy claims to run Posobiec's Facebook page and claims to run the War Room pandemic social media. So there's this kind of flow around Bannon. Now, as for Dugin, you're going to have to wait for part 6.
Ooh, I like that. That's the promotional type of stuff I respect. I'm really trying to pay attention to the master marketers out there, and that's up there, man. That's
yes, but not part 5. But part 5 is the next one.
All right, want to give us a little hint about part 5?
Posobiec has made quite a few claims that like he had a very he's had some very normal trips to Poland and all his, you know, everything that he was doing was just normal Polish pride stuff.
That says I had a normal trip to Poland is making people ask me a lot of questions about my trip to Poland.
I had a very normal Polish trip, and it was nothing remotely fascistic or white nationalist about it. Basically, has been his spin. I think we're going to disprove a little bit of that.
All right.
Or, I mean, we'll see. He'll dig in. He'll say something else about it. But I think it further reinforces what Posobiec was up to out there.
All right. Now, here's the last question, and then I'll let you go. I promise. This comes from some random guy named Jared Holt via YouTube.
What?
Via YouTube Super Chat. I know.
I mean, asshole.
Yeah, I know, man. I don't know. You know him? I've never heard of this guy before.
Oh, God. He's, you know.
All right, he said,
I heard he's a right-wing commentator.
Right. I heard that recently too, yeah. Right? Yeah. Good pivot, by the way, if you're going to do that. I mean, that's where the money's at.
Yeah, he knows how to cash out.
Right. So this Holt character says, love you both. A question for after the interview. Strangest thing Mike learned about Posobiec during reporting left on the cutting room floor. So, I mean, I guess now that we know there's some more parts coming out, Let's talk about, let's hone in on just, because obviously you don't want to give away what you know is coming out.
Oh,
stuff,
man, yeah.
Stuff that you know is going to be.
It's a good question. You know, I don't want to say that because there may be some stuff that I could still get in. That's part of the thing. I'm trying to think of some of the stuff that I cut.
Did you cover the time that she showed up at Posobiec showed up at Shakespeare in the Park with Laura Loomer?
That's what I'm saying about Posobiec. This is what I'm saying. He's like 50,000 people. He's like, how can I do 7 stories on this guy that are like 20,000 words total? It's like a book, and like I'm not even going to get into that.
Right.
I'm not even going into it.
Well, there you go. That's the cutting room floor right there. The time that Jack Posobiec started yelling gerbils at Shakespeare in the Park.
Oh, my God. He's so weird. What a weird dude. Things that left off the cutting room, because, you know, I did mention that, like, that he was in those, you know, he's in those conversations. I didn't include that in the reporting from the early stuff. Well, I do think I'm going to mention it, but there's an account, I believe it's called like Red Pill Dropper or something like that, that he seemed to be retweeting a lot, that is very weird and posted just total Nazi stuff constantly. And I don't know why nobody ever noticed this. It was just sort of, you know, I mean, it's just a total anti-Semitic thing that was on the internet, and it was Posobiec was retweeting it all the time and interacting with it. And this account also just kept appearing in his replies, this mysterious person. But I do think that account actually may make an appearance in the last story because he got, you know, I'm going to try to focus on some of the Antifa, you know, propaganda that he put out in the last one, because that's sort of one for the home team, kind of in the sense of, you know, people on the left, you know, what does this mean? Or progressives, what does this really mean? This means there's this guy out there who has been trying to make everything progressive, you know, this scary ISIS, you know, his version of whatever Antifa is. I want to bring it back there to sort of just be like, this is not just about this bad guy, but this is a thing that we're confronting right now. Where is it coming from? It's coming from this person who has all these white nationalist fascist ties, who's so deeply rooted in it. But yeah, this weird account, I think I was going to come up in the last one. I don't think I'll be able to report effectively how many times I've seen this account just appear in Posobiec's replies or being retweeted. It's very bizarre. It kept coming up.
Do you think it's one of his alts?
I would never make such, you know, that kind of speculation.
It appears like it could be, allegedly.
I'm not going to say that because I almost think that he just doesn't even have the time to operate an account that like a second account like that. So I'm not going to say that, but he might have known who it was, just based upon, you know, or might have had an idea. But then again, you know, Microchip told me
We didn't even get to that. Oh boy, that's something people got to read in the really quick. So people know what you're talking about. Microchip is a is like a big personality on Gab, big right wing.
I mean, I've never had anything been able to cash in on something so well as to have to be able to reference Microchip in a story like this, because as anybody who is who has followed my work closely for years knows, I was on Gab. I would go on a Gab at like 8 a.m. It was like a, you know, checking in at the racism factory. I used to go in every morning and talk to these guys every day. And like, you know, it, I was the only, like, it was me and then it was Luke O'Brien, but I was verified. Gab verified me. And for whatever reason, I think they regretted it once they kicked me off. You know, I got kicked off of Gab, right?
Oh, did you see there,
like, yeah, you saw the Vic Mackey got doxxed, that guy, Matthias, you know, confirmed it. Anonymous Comrade was the person who, anyway.
Right, right.
He was this completely terroristic psychopath on Gab. I actually got banned from Gab for making a joke involving a rocket launcher to Vic Mackey. And now, you know, he was one of the most vile, like, scary people in the history of that website.
Did you move over to Parler after you got banned from Gab?
I tried Parler for a day. And I was like, this just sucks, dude. It's just like, you know what I mean? It's like trying to be like a free speech alternative, but like it's boring and it's got like really old people vibes. It fucking smells like mothballs on Parler.
Right. Sucks. It's not. When it came out, I was like, oh, I bet Gab is worried about the competition, but it's really a completely different audience.
Gab was like maybe the most evil thing on the internet during 2017. It was like so bad, but it wasn't boring. Like you know what I mean? Like Parler is just, you know, dull, dry. Now, and like the world would be a better place without these websites. They're horrible. Telegram is I think much worse than Gab, actually, in many ways. But
you know, the one good thing about Telegram though is that it's sequestered to the point where, I mean, that's bad in some senses, but it's sequestered to the point where you're not going to be brainwashing any easily amendable youth who are looking for an outlet, you know?
I also think, and this has less to do with the platform and more to do with the time we're in, I think it's just riddled with feds. Like, Telegram is like 70% feds now. It's like they come in and they're like, hey, you know, who wants to blow up something? And then, like, next thing you know, there's a million guns pointing in somebody's face.
I mean, there's definitely something to that, because from a tech standpoint, Telegram not as secure as something like Signal. So, you know, if you're on Telegram, you should be a little bit aware of what you're this is for the
they're on Wire too, which bums me out, because I always wanted Wire to be the left version of Telegram. You know what I mean? Like,
unfamiliar with that one.
Wire is great. I use Wire a lot. So what I was gonna say was who spent more time reading Microchip's Gab posts? And it was like, it felt like I was wasting this time in some respect. I was like, oh man, I'm just, you know, posting back and forth with Microchip all day. And it's like, well, you know, now with this Pazobic series, I finally had a chance to use some of the things I knew about Microchip, which is that he was pro Adam Waffen Division. I would never, you know, I never forgot that. And just all the posts about Hitler and stuff like that. And Pazobic, you know, either he's so stupid or he doesn't care, but like he repeatedly shares the Gab feed and it tells you that he thinks it's normal, right? He's just like, hey, this is where I got my reporting. Here it is, Gab feed. It's like, dude, like you're sharing this guy's Gab feed. This website is just a hornet's nest of terrorists. He also, you know, Pazovic also, we didn't get into this either, like shared 8chan links. I mean, he's the dude's on 8chan.
Right.
It's an 8chan poll. This is like, you know, this is where the Poway shooter hung out. This is where a Christchurch killer hung out. This is where El Paso killer hung out. And Jack Pazovic was there. Did he post with those guys on poll? Or did he just read it?
Right.
Because if he posted with those guys on poll, it was, you know, nothing but, happy merchant level anti-Semitism, terrorist threats. It was, that website will singe your eyebrows off. Like, it is so, it was so dark.
Right. I mean, the way you're saying it, and from what my own experience of seeing him tweet it, I always got this real vibe from him that he was thirsty for acceptance from these people. Like, oh, maybe if I post these, like, these links to that, to this stuff, and people be like, oh, he's in there, he's deep in there, and I'll get cred with the people I want to get cred with. Like,
dude, Pazobic fucking posted like a meme, like, you know, as this stuff was coming out. That was like, it was so, it's such a dumb meme. It's the thing is, like, in some ways, I almost prefer reading Daily Stormer to fucking Pazobic's feed. Like, because at least it's like straight to the point. Like, you get what it's like. He posted this shitty meme where it was like two check marks and it said based, red pilled. I mean, he's still doing this shit.
Right.
That's because he shows you that it's like he's got nothing else. This is the only trick he has is taking this fascistic stuff and pushing it to a mainstream audience, you know, and finding ways to do that. That's the only trick he has in his book. And if you take it away from him, the rest is all this very weepy crap he's been doing recently after the story's come out, where he's trying not to get banned from Twitter. He's trying not to get fired from One American News. That's the impression that one gets, where he's just saying, like, tweeting things like pray and like this pro-Jesus engagement, like, trolling stuff. I mean, it's like, give me a break, dude. Nobody cares about this crap. Nobody's like, oh yes, I happen to, I happen to target like Wolf Blitzer with anti-Semitic stuff. You know, we're really interested in your prayer shit. I mean, nobody fucking cares. We know how you made it to where you are. On that note. All
right. Michael, thank you so much for joining me tonight, buddy.
Should be three more of these.
I'm super excited to see this because I think he is a really weird character. And I just want to reiterate that after all you just told me, I still can't believe the CBS News thing.
Dude, it's so funny. Why is it so funny? It's just so, because it's like, I would never have that. Like, you know, I would never be able to do it. You know what I mean? It'd be like going in and being like Pulitzer Prize winner Michael Hayden, like, you know, I'm just gonna do it and just be like, just hope nobody Googles me.
Because you know what, it was so like, just so like low level, like such a low level lie to do that it was believable. So when I did go to his feed, I thought, oh, we have another Baked Alaska, like someone who
who had a job, yeah, and they turned it, went off. One thing I gotta say that's very important. I feel like a poor audience, but
I don't know, they love this too.
Fucking Pazobic, like, did a thing that many people in the Trump world do, which is, you know, oversell some connection to real accepted journalism. They do it all the time. You know, it's like that weirdo dude who's like become like big during the pandemic. They have, who's like former New York Times
reporter, right? Yes, I know what you're talking about.
You have, like, you know, a byline somewhere, anything, they hold on to it like a fucking life raft. And these people spend their entire lives trying to say that these, you know, CBS News is fake news, that this is like all, that everything is not real and everybody should live in this alternative reality. But it shows what a house of cards this stuff is, because of the degree to which, how important it is for them to have this fucking, these credentials, but you know?
You know what though? Those credentials to their audience, it works. Because, you know, the guy you just mentioned, Alex Berenson, the former New York Times reporter turned coronavirus conspiracy theorist. It came out recently that he was in discussion with Elon Musk to form a news organization. They ended up not going through with it, but I'll guarantee you that you got a billionaire who has been spouting out coronavirus conspiracy theories himself, and then he comes across a former New York Times reporter who basically legitimizes to him his own beliefs. You better believe that guy's gonna,
so dumb.
Right, you better believe he's gonna try to look into working with that guy, you know?
But, like, you know what I mean? Where, like, it's so desperate because, like, you have this, it's this fixation with being illegitimate that they have, where you have like somebody like this, which, all day, the New York Times is fake news. The New York Times is fake news. And then this guy comes over and says, like, oh, well, he, you know, former New York Times and all this stuff. It would be really funny. I talk about this with Luke O'Brien a lot, they used to come up to me like, you'll never work for the New York Times. It's like, I wrote for the New York Times, dumbass. Like, both Luke and I had had bylines at different times there.
Oh, wow. Credentials.
No. My point is, how, you know, that stupid, you'll never work for the New York Times.
No, I know. I'm just messing with you.
Which is horrible. They really, like, were terrible to Bernstein. Shit is, like, it's their own, it's like accusations in a mirror all the time. It's this own feeling of inadequacy. Didn't do it, didn't make it, you know, which goes back to Pazobic with that fucking warfare pin.
Oh, if it's not, listen, if it's not the journalistic credentials, most of these right-wingers, they wanted to be Hollywood celebs. They wanted to be big shots in L.A. They wanted to have an acting career. They wanted to be...
I've got an answer for Holt. Then we can go.
Let's hear it. Did I just give you something here?
I left on the thing.
Was Pazobic a background actor?
One of his early podcasts, he said, Jack Pazobic said that he did some auditioning at Broadway and wanted to be a musical theater guy. There I go. I answered Holt's question.
I'm glad I could spark that memory for you, you know?
Yes. I was like, how do I get this in? Ah, fuck it. You know, like, yeah. Musical theater fascism.
I'm telling you, but this is the truth. From Ben Shapiro to Jack Pasobic, these guys all wish they were somebody in the worlds that they condemn liberals for being a part of. And it boils down to jealousy. It boils down to them not being able to make it, so they think there was a reason I should have made it, but I didn't because they didn't want me to. It has nothing to do with that. These guys are just not talented enough to be to do it. It's that simple. I mean, it's just, that's what it comes down to.
I mean, yeah, but also there's the other thing is, like, because they're able to, like, if you sell out to that degree, if you're ready to go full in and lick boots for the Trump administration, like 24 hours a day, you know, you're going to get rewarded with a shit ton of engagement on social media, you know, and they assume that everybody else wants that. Like that's their, you know, that getting that attention is what everybody else wants. And they don't understand anything else, right? They don't understand any other currency in life. And I think that engagement that they get fills those, you know, we're getting psychological here, but I mean, it sort of fills the holes of those feelings of inadequacy that it's like, well, I'm not a CBS news reporter. I'm not like a, you know, big shot. I'm known as this Pizzagate guy or whatever, but like, look at me make that fucking rag pop on the timeline. Look at me snap off these fucking Antifa tweets. You know,
do we know what he auditioned for? Do we know any specific auditions?
No, I don't, but you should look up the podcast. There's a SoundCloud. It's the Jack Pazobic podcast. Oh, and there's one part where he's, there's one thing.
Do you have this pulled in case it gets removed? Do you have this pulled in case it gets removed?
Oh yeah, I did it. He did a song called Donnie B. Trump.
Oh my God.
Donnie, and it was like, and he's singing Johnny B. Good.
Oh my God. I gotta find this.
And it's like really emotional sounding. Like the voice has got a little too earnest.
Oh,
Donnie J. Trump. That's it. Donnie J. Trump.
Oh my God. I gotta, I mean, this is going to become a song that I play
City
on this.
On, like, his street. He did the like, he said, Donnie G. Trump. Yeah, it's like, it's really, really good.
Oh, no.
The thing is, I came across so many things with which people could just dunk on Pazobic with. But that is not the point. The point is that this is quite a scary phenomenon. So it's like, if I had done this, you know, profile for, I don't know what tonally, the Gawker or something like that, like a Deadspin concourse thing, it would have been filled with Donnie J. Trump type stuff because there's so much of that in this guy's background.
You know, in a lot of ways, though, this stuff that we're talking about right now, it really does help delegitimize some of these guys in many ways. So I don't think it's definitely worthwhile.
But I don't think it does in the eyes of the conservative establishment. I mean, it does in front of us. I mean, like, Pazobic has no legitimacy, has no currency among non-Trump people. He's actually, he's up a creek, I think. You know, if Trump leaves office peacefully, he's in trouble because what else does this guy, I mean, he, like, how could he?
There's, you know, Don Jr. 2024. You know, there's openings.
Which is something that he texted to Katie McHugh, by the way.
right. Well, that's not surprising at
Texas
all.
Texas Don Jr. 2024.
Listen, I people who think that stuff is, and I don't think you think this. I'm just saying in general. I mean, you definitely don't think this because you're in there with all this muck. But the Republican Party is Trump. That's it now. Like, this is where it's going, and whether Trump wins or loses, he's the now. You know how conservatives for decades, everything was Reagan, 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 Reagan. It's gonna be Trump, 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 Trump. The difference is that Trump's kids are gonna take part in the grift too. So the Trump, Trump, Trump thing is gonna last even longer than the Reagan, Reagan, Reagan thing.
Yeah, but Reagan was an admired figure, and I'm not saying that that is in any way justified. But I mean, he was popular. I mean, he was popular. He fucking trounced in the 1984 election, for instance.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about Trump,
is the most despised, arguably the most despised politician, to ever hold office. I think that we may ever see. I mean, he was despised when he won.
Right, but in the eyes of his base, which is like 95% of the Republican Party, he's a god. I mean, he's even beyond Reagan.
Which is why things could get extremely volatile on the right if he leaves power, if he agrees to I think we just have to be open minded about what could happen after the election. Let's put it that way. Let's start with that.
Right.
Be open minded about anything that could happen. I don't think there's any way that Trump could win legitimately, but I think that mathematically it says he can. But I mean, anything can happen. Let's put it this way. A lot can happen. There are a lot of variables that could happen. And, you know, if it ends with Trump leaving the White House, giving up because, you know, he doesn't want to, there is going to be a reckoning for the Republican Party. And I'm sorry, but Don Jr., you brought up, is so leaden, so dull, and so unlikable. His face is dumb looking. He's not it, man. He's not.
I agree. He wouldn't win, but he could definitely, keep Trump's followers coming. You know.
And I know a lot of people are scared of Tucker Carlson because he's really smart and he seems like a more organized version of Trump and stuff like that. And whatever. First of all, there's no indication that he is going to run. And second of all, people I think miss one thing about Trump, which is that he had this non-political appeal to working class people before he started to run. Now, of course, there was the birther stuff and all that, but he was also the guy from The Apprentice, which did not, we can look at it now as a piece of reactionary entertainment, but it didn't really have a political, in the eyes of people. Like, he was a cultural figure. A racist man, unequivocally. But Tucker Carlson, the best he can hope for is Trump's base. And we have to think that that's going to shrink a little bit. I don't see how he could do better than that, considering how extreme and how aligned with Trump he already is.
Right.
Anyway, yeah. We'll see. I'm always ready for more disappointment.
I hear you. Michael Hayden of Southern Poverty Law Center, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I'll be thinking of both former CBS News and the Broadway auditions for the rest of the night, because that is fantastic.
Yes. And I'll get that Donnie J. Trump thing for you soon.
Oh, yes.
Please do. I'm going on vacation for 2 weeks, but there's more coming after the break.
People, I have linked to the landing page for all of the Jack Posobiec reports from Michael on both the YouTube and the Patreon page. I will also link it in the when the podcast goes up. Michael, where can people find you online?
I'm Twitter at Michael E. Hayden.
All right, Michael. Always a pleasure when you join the show. You always have
dude.
Great stuff. Enjoy your vacation. It is well deserved.
My brain is like straight peanut butter right now. So we need this.
I hear you. I'll talk to you soon, buddy. Take care.
All right, bro.
All right. We're going to go into the... Oh, we went really long. Look at that. I was having so much fun, I didn't even realize. So we'll do... we got my green screen's off center too there. Let me see if I can fix that. There we go. I'm going to do a really short second half of the show because there are some comments I want to get to. You know, maybe like 20 minutes. You know, usually the first half isn't this long, but this was such a great interview. How was I not going to keep it going? I always, you know, I'm saying this as if it's a shocker, but on this show, how many times do I go well over? All the time, almost. But anyway, patreon.com/MattBinder. Really, supporting this show will help it grow. Whether you care about getting the audio version of the patron-only show, or just listen to the first half, or just listen to the whole thing live, whatever, none of it's possible without the Patreon subscribers. So patreon.com/MattBinder. It's, you know, we're taking off a little bit, actually. We're at the most patrons the show's had, and I'm really proud of it. And I hope it's because, you know, I think we've been putting out some really good stuff in terms of, I mean, the last episode of the regular Doomed show, it was a great episode with Jared Holt. And next week's show is going to be another really great one. I'm just confirming the details of the exact day soon, but I know what the topic's going to be, and it's going to be really good. I'll let you guys know about that more shortly. YouTube.com/MattBinder. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. DoomedPod.com for the audio version of the show. iTunes, Google Play, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can get it there too. Leave an iTunes review if you can. What else? Patron subscribers, remember how I said that we would get to a point where there's just too many to name all of you? We're at that point, I think. But I'm going to make sure next episode I name every single one of you Patreon subscribers at least one last time. Every single one gets named. Then we'll revert to a, you know, some people get named in 1 week, and more people get named the next week as a thank you, because it's just getting to be too much. But for now, because it's an hour and a half long show, we're going to skip the Patreon shout outs completely. And I feel bad doing it, so I'm almost ready to do it. But no, I got to stick to it because we're running out of time. And I'm, quite frankly, this show is the second show I've done of the day earlier today, and I'll talk more about it in the second half. I co-hosted The Majority Report with Jamie Peck of The Majority Report and The Antifada, and Matt Leck of The Majority Report and Literary Hangover and The Michael Brooks Show, and Majority Report producer Brendan. So I'll talk more about that in the second half the patron-only show. Otherwise, see you all next time. Oh, also super chats if you're sticking around. Thank you for everyone who has done a super chat so far. I will definitely read the super chat comments in the second half. Probably not going to get to all the other comments, though. See you all next time on Doomed.